What's up, friends? Welcome into another episode of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. So happy to have you aboard for this episode. I am your host, TB. I want to thank you all so very much for stopping in and checking out the three T's. Now, first off, an apology. This episode, normally I try to get the episodes out Monday or Tuesday of the week, and obviously there's been a delay. So I'm going to give everyone out there a little piece of advice. Please don't schedule a Lumineers concert 2 hours away from where you live the night before you drive 6 hours to get to Buffalo for the home opener against the Ravens, because it makes for an incredibly long, tiring weekend. But here I am. I apologize for the delay. I am so excited to dive right in. There's so much to get to, so much to talk about. So let's not waste any more time. Bills Mafia, how the heck are we feeling after that absolutely insane, incredible, amazing victory on Sunday night in Orchard Park against probably the best team we're going to see in the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens? Absolutely crazy. I have so many thoughts on this game, so much to discuss. First and foremost, overall, the atmosphere was insane. The crowd was jacked. It was so freaking loud in there. The first time the Ravens got the ball, it was just crazy. Like, my ears were actually hurting with how loud at least the section where we were sitting was. Normally we were in 137. We got the opportunity to upgrade our seats, so we moved into 135 this year. It was awesome to be. I didn't think moving two sections to the right was going to have that big of an impact on the viewing experience, but we went from sitting on about the 5 yard line to the 25, and let me tell you, it makes a world of difference. But anyway, let's start off with some general thoughts on the game. The Bills obviously receive the kick, and they then proceed to march all the way down the field. First drive, touchdown to Dalton Kincaid, and it was great. They looked awesome. They marched right down the field. Then they kick off. And like I said, the crowd was freaking jacked. It was so loud in there. The Ravens move the ball a little bit, but then they stutter once they get to the Buffalo side of the 50. The third down is stopped by the incredible Ed Oliver sack on Lamar, and it forces them into a field goal. Now, to their credit, they got a new rookie kicker. This Loop kid crushes a 52-yarder right off the bat. So props. I'm like, oh, wow, this kid. Justin Tucker, like, you don't need him. You got this dude who's smashing it, his debut week one kick from 51 or 52 yards. But, and then the absolute wheels fell off the car. And I don't know what the heck happened for the next few drives, because it's like, and all I could think about was like, you know, it's a nice Sunday afternoon, and you got a nice shiny sports car in the garage, right? And you turn to your wife, your significant other, and you're like, hey, you want to go take a drive a couple hours away to a town over, and we'll go have a nice lunch or dinner, what have you, and we'll spend the day, we'll put the top down, it'll be great. Well, I feel like the Bills decided to take the car out, and then 5 miles into their trip, they decided to park it on the side of the road and call some stupid Uber to come pick them up, or they hitchhiked the rest of the way, because I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You're not letting the best player in the league actually play football. The play calling took a decidedly negative turn, and it was absolutely terrible. The fans in my section, including myself, we were turning around, looking, trying to find Joe Brady, because we're on that side of the field. We're trying to find Joe Brady. His play calling was atrocious. And so all the anger and animosity, and at least in my section, the people around me were screaming at Joe Brady to get his head out of his ass. And it was just insane. The dinks, the dunks, the screens, like, we have a Lamborghini sitting in the garage and we are wanting to take an Uber, and it doesn't make any freaking sense. And so it got me thinking, all this talk we spent in the offseason about Joe Brady and, oh, is he going to get a full-time head coaching job? Is he going to go somewhere else? Well, do we really know? Do we really, really know that Joe Brady is good? Or is it simply Josh Allen has continued to elevate his play so much that he masks so many weaknesses? So whether he covers up for having a true number one, whether he covers up for the defense, whether he covers up for the offensive play calling, what's really going on here? Because let me tell you, folks, we are witnessing one of the greatest players in my lifetime that I've ever seen play the game. I don't know what they're doing with trying to slow the game down and the ball control. The goal each and every Sunday or whenever we take the field should be 40 points. That's my opinion. I think it should be pedal to the metal, strive to be the highest scoring team in the league because you have the reigning MVP. Don't slow the game down. What are you doing? Don't take your foot off the gas. We have players on offense who can run up tempo. Do it. Stop screwing around. Stop trying to overthink everything. Use the MVP, Josh Allen, to the best of his ability and freaking go for it. Your thought process as the offensive coordinator, as the head coach, should be to stomp on the necks of your opponent. Don't keep teams in games. Don't allow the defense to catch their breath. March up and down the field each and every time and go for the jugular. I would rather take risks than to watch the crap that was put out there, the 3 to 4 drives after the first touchdown, because I'm like, what the hell is this? This is not what we are. We all know how the game ended, and I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit, but that was frustrating to have it activated, wait so long into the game to actually change the mentality of the play calling to go full attack mode, because clearly when we have to go into that mode, we've seen it time and time again. He's capable of doing it. He's capable of leading this team, this offense, drive after drive of scoring opportunities. He's capable, and we have the horses. So I don't want to hear this, we got to slow the game down because our defense is going to get stomped. No, go for the jugular. Go try to score every single time you have the ball. Your goal should be to score 40 freaking points. Do not let off the gas for 60 minutes. You score, it allows your defense to then play a little looser, allow them to take chances, not worry that they have to stop them each and every time. I'd rather have a defense that goes and plays super aggressive than to sit back and literally get gashed like we saw Sunday night. It was terrible. It was terrible. Now, as I said in my week one preview, I do think this defense is going to be very different in the second half of the season. We have a lot of people either injured or suspended that are going to come back and make an impact on this team. So I do think the second half of the season, you're going to see so many new pieces. And I want to try to hold off on ripping the team to shreds, the defense, the defensive side of the ball to shreds. But oh my God, it's going to be tough to do, folks. It's going to be tough to do. I want to give them a little grace here because I also think the Ravens are one of the top, 1 to 3 offensive teams in the entire league. I think that they are capable of dropping 35 points every week without really trying. And my other point is I don't think our defense matches up with them. I would rather play, as crazy as this sounds, I think we have a better chance of beating the Chiefs on a consistent basis than we do of beating the Ravens because I don't think we match up with them very well at all. This idea that we have found the game plan to contain Lamar, that's out the window. That was 3-4 years ago. Yeah, before we used to shut him down and he couldn't do anything. Now he can literally do whatever the hell he wants and there's no stopping him or Derrick Henry, who is an absolute train wreck. And he gashed us crazy. When you're averaging 10 yards a carry, you got a problem. You got a problem. I felt like I was watching a game where they were playing with an extra man. That's how easy it was for them to move the ball. He's literally gaining a first down every time he got the ball. Obviously, I'm seeing it in person. And then I go home, and over the last few days, I've rewatched this game. I've rewatched portions of this game numerous times. And boy, I got to tell you, I hate to do it, but the linebackers, one of the things I noticed in person was Bernard. Terrell Bernard was terrible, and my suspicions were confirmed when I went back and I watched the actual broadcast because there were so many times that he wasn't even paying attention. He didn't even have his eyes on the offensive side of the ball when the ball was snapped. I went back and I rewatched it. He's calling out. So what the Bills do is they do all this shifting and pre-snap reads and they're constantly making adjustments. I almost think it's too much. It's too much because what the Ravens were doing was they would literally get to the line of scrimmage and they would quick snap it. And Bernard, there were numerous times where Bernard and Milano are like looking around in a different direction and the ball is in play. And so instantly they are flat-footed, they're off guard, they're not ready for the play to begin, and it led to them getting gashed. So I'm watching two well-respected, highly touted linebackers in the National Football League just look completely lost, and it was very disheartening. So yeah, we all want to sit here and bash Cole Bishop and the safeties and the cornerbacks, and I'm not saying they were great, but when your middle line of defense, your linebackers aren't even ready to play the snap, it really puts everything behind the eight ball. We saw Cole Bishop get posterized, and that's going to be on all the highlights for the entire year, him getting laid out by Henry and stiff-armed and all that nonsense. But I really think some of his teammates did the secondary a complete disservice. Obviously, we had no Trey White. Obviously, we're missing Maxwell Hairston. So trying really hard not to rush to judgment, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. The Ravens are just doing whatever they want to the Bills. It was crazy. And then, obviously, the fourth quarter happens. What I found when I rewatched the game was quite interesting, because you don't see this stuff when you're actually there. But the third quarter, as the third quarter is winding down and the fourth quarter starts, on the broadcast, you can see the faces and the attitudes of all the Raven players on the sideline, and the camera was zooming in on certain individuals, and they're joking and they're laughing and they're carrying on. And I know at one point Zay Flowers is doing the wave to the crowd and almost like taunting them, not really. And we're going to get to the crowd nonsense in a little while here, but it's almost like that they thought the game was completely wrapped up. And I really think they let off the gas. It's funny, as I continue to watch the playback of the game, their faces slowly incrementally changed as now the Bills keep scoring and putting more and more pressure on them, and suddenly nothing's so fun and jovial anymore, and oh, maybe we should stop screwing around and joking and take this seriously, and oh, the game's over, we just lost. And given the history of this Ravens team and how many times Harbaugh has been in this situation, you would think by now that they would have coached up for these situations. And that was the thing. The last few possessions, at least the last possession the Ravens had the ball, right before they punted on the 4th-and-3, and we could talk about that in a minute, but what the heck are they doing with their play calls? You have first down, they run Derrick Henry, which is fine. I think he got like 3 yards. The second, they do a jet sweep to Zay Flowers. The whole idea and the concept behind the jet sweep is to head towards the sideline and then cut up field. Why would you even risk that, knowing full well that he can't go out of bounds because you're going to stop the clock? You see Zay Flowers literally fall down because he doesn't want to go out of bounds and stop the clock, but yet the play call forced him to have to do that. It was just a terrible, I'm watching this going, what the hell did they just do? That's one of the worst play calls I've ever seen. And to get cute right then and there in that situation, I thought that was one of the worst play calling decisions I've ever seen. And then obviously third down, they throw a pass. They get like 4 yards out of it. So now you have a 4th-and-3. And I'm thinking right then and there, they're going for it. Had I been a Ravens fan, I would have been screaming to the heavens, you better go for this. You better go for this. Ice this game over right now. You got it. And then they punt. And we all know what happens next. Bills get the ball, march down the field. They make the Ravens use their timeouts. And as the gun goes off, 41-year-old Prater, welcome to the team. You hit the game-winning, 32-yard field goal, chip shot, which, by the way, was an inch from being blocked. So many things happen in the last 4 or 5 plays of the game. It's unbelievable. But the play call there on second down was terrible. And the decision to punt the ball away, right, wrong, and different. I guess you could argue this, but come to find out after the game, Lamar says post-game press conference that he was cramping. And I'm thinking to myself, you make $50-plus million a year, and you are actually going to tell people that you're cramping? He said, well, if I wasn't cramping, I would have been advocating that we go for the first down. But because I was cramping, what can I do? And I'm like, is this the face of your franchise? First of all, I would never say that. I would be like, I don't care if I got one leg. If you are absolutely believe that that's the right call as a quarterback, you're going for the play. You're going for the first down. Put the game away. I don't know. It was crazy. The whole way that game changed in the fourth quarter, unbelievable. Now, a lot of people are talking after the game about John Harbaugh and his history with situations like this. And obviously we knew that in NFL history, I think the stat was no team has ever come down or ever come back from 15 with 4 minutes left. So you had like so many things going for against us. And at one point, you know, I think it was like 9-10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, maybe even before that, because I knew we were just getting gashed. I turned to my wife, who's a diehard Ravens fan, and I turned to her and I said, congratulations, you all whooped our ass. Like, I had actually come to peace with the fact that we were going to lose this game. We weren't leaving. I know that there was a thought in our minds, hey, let's get out of here, but we ultimately decided to stay. But I had come to peace with the fact that we were going to lose because we couldn't stop them. It was just gash after gash. And then, obviously, you know, do you believe in miracles, right? But it's funny, making peace with that, I got to watch the game unfold without a huge sense of tension and calmness and seeing everyone file out of the stadium. And we can talk more about that here in a minute. But it was just a crazy, surreal experience to watch that last drive as they're coming down the field, putting themselves in position. The throw to Jackson Hawes was just ridiculous. I know that was the series before, but it's just play after play after play. And I'm reminded, and I'm kind of glad I had a few extra days to process this whole game and what it means, because so many times we've been on the losing end of a game like this, right? And even looking back at the field goal to win it, seeing how close, I think it was Hamilton, seeing how close he was to blocking the kick. Can you imagine if we come all the way back, we have a 32-yard field goal to win it as time expires and it's blocked? Can you imagine like that? That would be fitting for Bills fans, for Bills Mafia, knowing the history and how many games like this I have seen. I remember we're leaving and driving back, and I'm thinking about the Viking game a few years ago that I was with my son at. And remembering sitting there in total disbelief, and we're looking at each other like, what just happened? So this game's going on, and then to actually pull this one out and win it, it was unreal. And so everyone's celebrating, and then Mr. Brightside kicks in, and it's just crazy how loud that place was and how everyone's singing in unison. And you see Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid run around the field carrying on with the Mr. Brightside. It was just unreal. I've never been at a sporting event like this before in my life. I probably never will. And watching it back on TV, it was very surreal knowing I had been in the stadium, a few hours earlier. So just crazy, crazy, crazy game. But I keep going back to this. And I talked about it in a podcast earlier. I talked about not taking this season for granted and actually enjoying it and enjoying and appreciating what we have, because Josh Allen is a unicorn. He is a very special, once in a generation talent that we are never going to see again. Bills fans, I beg you, do not take this for granted. Every time he takes the field, magic can happen. And it usually does happen. And the way he leads this team, whether we want to think they're good or not, is kind of irrelevant. We get to see him lead the team we love for a portion of our lives. And I think it's super important to just enjoy it. So we finally got out on the good side of this game. I'm hoping that this is the catalyst for an amazing season. What a game. What a game. But some of the X factors that I talked about in the week one preview. Dalton Kincaid, I mentioned him. He played real well. I know some of the concern coming into the season was his ability to block. And looking at the tape and watching him play, he played great. I think he played great. He had absolute key catches. The play before the half to set up the field goal with like less than a second to go was unbelievable. Unbelievable throw, unbelievable catch, way to get out of bounds. Like, so his numbers weren't amazing, like eye-popping, but 4 for 48 and a tutty. What a game. That was great. I thought he played well. I hope that this is the start of good things to come for him. Super excited to see what he does next. My other X factor, I thought on the defensive side, was Joey Bosa. Now, in the stadium, I thought he played like complete garbage. There were clear plays that he got toasted by Lamar. Toasted. Now, rewatching the game, he still got toasted on those plays, so don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand me, but I don't think he played as bad as I initially thought. I thought he played okay, and I'm hoping it's a sign that that he's going to have a good, solid season. I think, like I said, if he could stay healthy, he'll keep learning the system and keep doing his thing, and as this defense gels, I think he's going to be a huge factor for us. Ed Oliver, what can I say? The dude was clearly by far the best defensive player on both sides of the ball. He was an absolute beast. I've never seen him play that good before. It was great. Just a crazy, crazy game for him. And then, of course, Josh Allen. I know I didn't talk about him in the week one preview, but like I said, appreciate what you're watching. 33 of 46 for 394 and two touchdowns. Through the air and two on the ground. And in the fourth quarter alone, 250 yards and two touchdowns in the fourth quarter alone. There are quarterbacks, numerous quarterbacks in week one who didn't do this in the entire game. So, oh my God, this guy is just, every time you think he can't set the bar any higher, he goes ahead and smashes it. So just appreciate every opportunity you get to watch him. Don't take it for granted. Now, a couple other things I want to talk about. Just the whole experience there. The stadium, like sound guy / video board operator, I don't know what the hell was going on, but they were not good. Not good, Bob. At one point when we had the penalty on the extra point and then the 2-point conversion and that got called back, and it was like they kept playing the Bills shout song over and over again. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Are you paying attention to anything that's happening in the actual game, or you just have to play this song? Because at some point, I love the shout song. I love it so much. We actually incorporated it into our wedding at the end and during the ceremony, you know, the dance portion. But like there's parts of the game that you got to stop with the shout song. Like, we don't need it 50,000 times. I love it. I love singing it. But like, read the room here, people. Like, chill with the shout song. And then the video board, I don't know what they were doing. Every time I look up, it's an advertisement for FanDuel. And I'm like, what is going on? Can you show replays? Can you actually put something worthwhile on the screen so the people in the stadium can see what the hell is going on? It was crazy. Let's talk about a couple of the elephants in the room. Now, a lot of people obviously left this game, and I will never fault someone who wants to leave an event, whether it's a sporting event, some sort of entertainment. Look, you pay your hard-earned money, you buy that ticket, you get in that stadium, you are free to leave when you see fit. There was a time that I had thought about it. Maybe we should get the hell out of here because we are getting our butts kicked. And my buddy Mike thought about it too. He's like, I kind of wanted to get out of here. So I don't begrudge anyone for leaving. And I know Josh made some comments after the game was over, and he kind of doubled down on that. And he said, y'all need to have some faith. I get where he's coming from. I do, because I don't think it's from a place of malice. I think what he's trying to tell you, Bills Mafia, is I'm going to give you everything I got each and every game. We might not always win, but I'm going to lay it all out there for you no matter what happens. And so him saying, have some faith. Yeah, it was probably the first time seeing that situation, because what? They didn't lose a game in Orchard Park last year. And so here we are, home opener. And some of the other factors people got to understand, right? Sunday night, the game didn't get over till almost midnight. What was it, 11:30, 11:40? The game gets over. It's Sunday. It's a school night. People work. The traffic, let me tell you, coming into Orchard Park Sunday, we got there probably around 2 o'clock coming into town, and we had a couple things to do around town before we started tailgating. There were people tailgating since 8, 9 a.m. Like, that's a long freaking day. And we drove in, like I said, our drive-in's about 6 hours, and then we tailgate until roughly 7, walk into the stadium, and now it's suddenly 11, 11:30. You're freaking tired. So I get it. But let's not crap on the fans that left, because everybody has their own story. Everyone has their own scenario. In my opinion, them leaving and then missing out was probably the worst punishment that they could ever have. So we don't need to crap on them. Everyone's got their own deal, whether it's travel, time, day of the week, that kind of stuff. Like I said, hard-earned money. Y'all can can choose to leave, come and go as you see fit. Now, what you can't do, this is the other elephant in the room, what you can't do is put your hands on the players. So the clown who decided to hit D-Hop and then double down on it, and then I know the one that D-Hop was kind of just like a tap on the helmet, so that was whatever. But then the whole Lamar thing where he's shoving the guy and then Lamar retaliates and literally gives him a double forearm shimmy. I'm not saying Lamar should have done that, but dude, keep your freaking hands to yourself. What are you doing? Like, there's no place for that. And the other clown who's throwing a bottle at Derrick Henry as he's scoring his 50th touchdown against us that game, like, there's no place for it in the stadium. I don't want to be associated with these morons. It's super frustrating. Can we just not be complete a-holes sometimes? I get there should be rivalries, and I get we don't want opposing fans to come into our stadium, but number one, let's not be intimidating people. Let's not be threatening people. Let's not be getting in people's faces. There's a line, right? Like, you can jest and you can like kind of poke fun at each other and it's all in good fun. But we should be able to go into other stadiums. And I say this as a Bills fan, and I say this as a fan of sports in general. I should be able to go into any opposing stadium, arena, what have you, as a fan of the opposing team and still have a good time. Now, if I'm going to go in there and get into fights with people, then I got what I have coming. But if I just want to go and enjoy a sporting event, I should not be harassed. I should not be cold cocked. I'm hearing crazy stories of just people doing stupid, terrible things to other human beings who just happen to root for the other team. Like, there's no place for that in any sport, in any arena, in any stadium. Knock off the nonsense. Be better. Be better to each other as human beings. It's very simple. Anyway, I was kind of all over the place with some of the thoughts on the game. What a game. Can't wait to see where this season goes. I'm going to try to get a week two preview out of the Jets game. That's coming up real quick. I'm hoping to get that out to you all Friday. But those are my thoughts on the Bills game. I know post game, we already cut the punter. So sayonara. I know you did a terrible job. I think the last punt you had was like 22 yards. That was yikes. This is what I told you about in one of the, I think it was the would you rather scenario. Would you rather have to go for it on every fourth down, or would you rather have some clown punting? And I kind of just get the punter off the freaking team and put the gas pedal to the floor, and let's see what we can do with this offense. Crank it up to 10, whatever you got to do. Don't slow down. Our goal, like I said at the beginning, should be 40 points each and every week. So there. Anyway, hobby enthusiast, card enthusiast, how are we feeling this week? Lot to talk about. The main thing on my mind that I want to kind of work through at the beginning of this section is the hobby prices are out of control. I know I've talked about this before, and I know I sound like an old man yelling at the clouds, but it's gotten insane. They had a few EQLs this week. I think I talked about it last week. They had one product I was super looking forward to. SpongeBob Top from Topps Chrome was dropping. They had an EQL, which, if you don't know what an EQL is, it's essentially a lotto. You put in a ticket and you hope your name's drawn, and if it's drawn, you've already committed to buy it. Well, this came out. SpongeBob, it was 5 cards per pack, 12 packs, which is 60 cards in a hobby box. When did the hobby boxes get so freaking small that we're only putting 60 cards in a hobby box? That should be a blaster box all day, every day. 60 cards for a hobby, and guess how much it was? It was $250, but I'm already hearing, and I missed out on it because I didn't get selected, and it's fine, whatever. $250 at that price? Do you know what these are going to be once they actually hit the market? I'm hearing prices from people in the hobby that these 60 card SpongeBob Chrome boxes are going to be upwards of $550 to $600. And I am like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And then the other one, WWE Finest, finally did their own EQL. And this is also 60 cards, and it's right around the same price. So $260 for that. I didn't get it. Didn't get that either. And fine, whatever. I was a little late to the party at work because they drop these things at like 12 or 1 o'clock, and it's always during the middle of the week. And sometimes I forget and I miss out on my window and whatever. But these are going to be the same thing. They're going to come back, and once they actually hit the shelves in our in secondary markets, we're looking at $400 to $500 for 60 cards of WWE Finest. And I'm just like, come on, people. What are we doing? And it's so frustrating because the SpongeBob one, like I told you about before, this has such a nostalgia factor for me. And when my kids were little and just spending time with them watching the show, and It looks awesome because there's a 200 card base set. There's tons of parallels. Some of the, I don't know if you remember any of this stuff, but there's a S-O-N-G song set, which is super cool. That celebrates music from the last 25 years of the show. There's a Bikini Bottom VIP cards. There's these awesome Shadowbox SpongeBob cards that are like numbered to 20 or less. The sketch cards and the Doodle Bob sketch cards. Like, this set is right up my alley, right? Because it's fun. It's entertaining. Like, they just look cool. I would like to get my hands on them, but there's no freaking chance I'm paying $300, $400, $500, $600 for 60 cards. It's insanity to me. And I just don't know what we're doing. The Cactus Jack, I've talked about this probably three times now, but the Cactus Jack, if you go on Dave and Adams right now, the Cactus Jack hobby box is $950. Think about that for a second. $950 for a box of cards. For WWE Cactus Jack, are you out of your mind? I've tried to remain calm about it, but it seems like the hobby is actually trying to direct people into breakers because no one in their right mind, no, I consider myself an average Joe type of guy. No one who falls into a category like me can afford any of these products. And so the only thing left that we have to do is join these freaking breaks. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to pay $60, $75 for the chance that I might get one card that I want. I don't know, but I think the hobby with the increased prices, I really think they're driving everyone into breaks, and I just think it's bad. I think it's really bad for the hobby. I don't know what there is to do about it, but it's extremely frustrating as a consumer. It's extremely frustrating as someone who wants to invest in some of these new products because they're cool and we really haven't seen some of this stuff before. And it just, you're instantly priced out of the market, and that is extremely frustrating. Tops Tier 1 came out today. If you thought 60 cards was bad, how about four? You want four cards? Now, I do really like these cards. These cards are fire. The relics in this set are absolutely legit. So the four cards, you get two guaranteed autos, you get one relic, and you get one base card. And, well, they're sold out because within 5 minutes, the hobby boxes, well, there's, it's really not a hobby box. It's four cards. They were going to retail for $320. They were gone instantly. And so now the secondary market, I don't even want to know. I'm already seeing them for $450, $500 for four cards. I'm not saying they're not awesome. They're awesome. I saw an Evan Longoria 1-of-1 Charizard Pokemon bat knob card. Now, why Evan Longoria has a card in this product, I don't know. So it kind of drives the cost down a little to me, but they have all these bat knobs in this product and they look sick. And I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, but this card looks awesome. So when I say the relics are legit, the relics are legit. It's just a great product. But again, who can afford this kind of money other than the big breakers? And then they're going to sell it to you for a spot to, you know, pull one card and it just goes on and on and on. So super frustrating. But what have I been getting into? We've picked up a few cool things in our travels. My wife and I spent an hour the other day opening Garbage Pail Kids 2021 Food Fight Hobby Collector Box for the low price of $35. I found this at some random hobby shop in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. And he had it's a collector tin box that looks like a refrigerator. Super cool. He had it for like $35. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to buy this. So we cracked this thing open. It was awesome. We got a signed sketch card, an autographed sketch card. It was just so much fun. If you haven't Googled Garbage Pail Kid Food Fight Herschel Squirts card, like, I encourage you to run to the computer and Google Herschel Squirts. It is, I know it's probably worth 4 cents, but I have already put a penny sleeve and top loaded this thing, and I have it on my desk, and I look at this card every day, and each and every time I do, it makes me laugh out loud. So you can't put a price on this, because when I started getting back into this, the number one reason I did it was to have fun. And that's the kind of thing that is fun to me. It's fun to me. Spending $400, $500, $600 is not fun to me. So I try to find stuff on the slightly lower end of the spectrum that I can have a good time opening. And what else have I gotten myself into? Well, I was at Walmart the other day, the Walmart that is never stocked with anything. They finally got a few football products in stock, and I picked up a 2025 Panini Score football blaster for the low, low price of $27. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Why not? And I honestly had a great time. You only get one numbered card, and you get, but I got a mem card, so I had a good time. I got a Eagles AJ Brown All-Star memorabilia card that was that's pretty cool. And I got a bunch of bills in there. So for $27, I'm like, are you kidding me? This was fun. This was great. And I think I'm going to go back and probably buy a couple more. If anyone's interested, it's 400 card base set. There's 300 vets and retired players, and then 100 rookies that make up the 400 card base set. And you can get some cool stuff. You can get some cool stuff. So I'm all about the cheap rip. I thought it was a lot of fun. I would encourage someone, maybe if you have kids or you're just looking to collect something, rip something cheap. It was a good time. Anyway, I think we're going to move on to the WWE and the tables portion of the program. Wrestling enthusiast, wrestling marks, how the heck are we feeling? I got to be open and honest with everybody. AEW has kind of taken a back seat. I simply do not have the bandwidth or the time. I can barely keep up. Now that football is in full swing, analyzing these games and preparing and all this stuff and watching SmackDown and Monday Night Raw and trying to keep up with Hobby Talk and all this other stuff, something had to go. And it sucks because there's some good stuff going on in AEW. I try to keep up with the results from the shows, Collision, Dynamite, that sort of thing. I was super gung-ho going into the last pay-per-view, and I just honestly just lost some steam. So if you're looking for the latest and greatest in AEW, you're not going to find it here. I wish I had the time to focus on it, but I just don't. So this is going to be WWE stuff predominantly moving forward, and hopefully soon I'll have some more time. What I need to do is retire, not have to go to work 4 days a week, and then I would have plenty of time to devote 100% of my efforts to this podcast and all the awesome hobbies that are incorporated. But as of now, that can't happen. So here we go. Let's dive into the world of WWE. There's a lot to talk about. SmackDown last Friday, we had the first half devoted pretty much entirely to John Cena. This was going to be the last time that he was in Chicago, and he cut a big promo. They all gave him his flowers. It was pretty nice. And then as he's leaving, Sami Zayn comes out, who is the current U.S. champion, and he challenges Cena to a match just purely out of respect. They go on, have a pretty decent match that takes up literally the first 50 minutes of the show, and then Brock Lesnar comes out and destroys the both of them, setting up the match between Cena and Lesnar on September 20th at WrestlePalooza in Indianapolis. It was a good first hour SmackDown. Really, really good stuff. I'm so glad we got away from the Cena heel turn. Obviously, I think it was good to see it. I don't think it was executed perfectly. I think it even gave more emphasis on him being a babyface when he actually turned back. So it gave people a reason to be all invested in the final good guy run of John Cena. So I'm enjoying it. I think the last few matches he's had have been great. I think this one with Sami Zayn was really well done. And obviously we didn't get a winner because Lesnar came in and destroyed them all. But what else was important on SmackDown? Really the only thing worth talking about was the return after 10 long years of none other than AJ Lee. Now this was probably the worst kept secret in wrestling, but still once she came out, the place went freaking nuts. Chicago, you guys crushed it. You always seem to, and well done. It was great seeing her come back. She looks like she hasn't aged more than a month or two. I mean, she looks pretty much exactly as she did when she left, which is amazing considering CM Punk looks old as hell now. And, anyway, I'm super excited about this angle between the two power couples. Now, it continued Monday night. If you haven't seen Monday Night Raw, AJ Lee came out. She cut a great promo. She talked about retiring 10 years ago, how she had to go away, how she had to get healthy mentally. And she talks about going on a mental health journey and going to therapy, and the crowd starts chanting for therapy. And it was actually a really good, heartfelt speech in which it got you invested. I think whether you followed her back in the day, which I did, I thought she was great. She was a very unique character during a time in wrestling where women weren't the wrestling focus that they are now. It was more of a, how do I want to put this? The Divas Championship. I mean, that should tell you all you need to know. The Divas Championship versus the Women's Championship and the way they have wrestling now. Wrestling for the women was not the focus. It was on their looks. It was on what they're wearing. It was on how they're acting. And the wrestling kind of took a back seat. Thank God we're no longer in that time frame, because the work the women are, I've talked about this before, the work the women are doing now is fantastic. And I can't wait to see her feud. Allegedly, I guess behind the scenes, this is not going to be a one-off. This is not going to be a one and done feud. She's going to be around for a while. And that has me super excited to see her compete with some of these ladies in WWE today. Can't say enough how awesome it is. So she cuts this awesome promo. It's great. And then Becky Lynch, who in my opinion is doing some of the best heel work in the company, she comes out wearing these crazy awesome sunglasses. She's looking more and more like Seth Rollins every day. Their image, it just bounces perfectly off the two of them. I love the heel work she's doing. So she comes out, she gets into it with AJ. Eventually Seth comes out and CM Punk comes out. And long story short, there's going to be a match. It's going to be great. It's a intergender or however couples, I don't even know what you call these anymore, couples tag team match at Wrestlepalooza, which is setting up to be one heck of a good show. I frankly can't wait to see this. I know a lot of people are like, no one wants to see this. Yes, I do. Sign me up. I love all four of these people. It's going to be great. I can't wait to see what they do moving forward. I love the interactions between Becky and Seth. I think it's great stuff. So I'm super excited to see where this goes. What else did I see on Monday Night Raw? The Bayley vignettes. If you haven't seen these little videos she's cutting where she's kind of doing this, I don't know, dual personality, weird stuff mentally. I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know where it's going, but I'm very intrigued because I think she's great. And I don't know what's going to happen, but if you keep me interested, then I'm going to keep paying attention, and that's really all that matters. The Usos reunited. Obviously, Jimmy and Jay were one of the greatest, most successful tag teams, and then kind of separated. They had a feud for a little bit in a terrible WrestleMania match. Jay kind of went off and did his thing. Obviously, he became heavyweight champion, and that title run wasn't one of my favorites. I didn't think it was very good. I'm not too sure that he is well suited to be the leading guy on a show. I thought he did okay, but I for one was not upset when he lost the belt, and I was super happy to see them reunite. But it seems like maybe it's going to be short-lived because Jay's already doing this bad attitude thing, because at the end of the show on Monday, he ends up spearing LA Knight to kind of get back at him for getting it. I don't know. It's kind of convoluted. But so the Usos are reuniting to fight Braun and Braun, and we shall see what happens with this. And then the only other match that's set up for Wrestlepalooza, which is in, what, 2 weeks? Less than 2 weeks, Io Sky versus Stephanie Vaquer for the women's title. This is the one that had to be vacated because of Naomi. I can't wait to see this match. I can't freaking wait to see this match. The Asuka stuff they're doing behind the scenes has been great. She's turning into a real good heel. I love the stuff she's doing with Kairi Sane, where she's like, Asuka's off the screen and then she's screaming at her, and Kairi Sane kind of, you know, runs after her. It's really good stuff. So I'm really looking forward to Wrestlepalooza. They got some good stories they're telling right now. It looks to be a good show. My only concern is now it's the debut show on ESPN, and we all have to figure out how the hell that's going to work in the app and paying whatever. It's going to be $30 a month, which no one's looking forward to. So we shall see what happens with that. But all in all, I think they are on the right track, and I can't wait to see what happens. But I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the 3Ts podcast. Please, everybody, do me a favor. Share this podcast with someone you know, whether they are a fellow Mafia member, a card collector, or someone who just loves professional wrestling. It doesn't matter. I'm trying to grow this one episode at a time. So leave me a review. Hit the follow. Hit the like. Do whatever you can. Tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. Help me build this one episode at a time, and I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, Whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills!